I'm very happy to have you. A very warm welcome from Berlin to Paris.
Hello, Simone. Thank you for inviting me. Thanks.
Paul, your book gathers your columns, a wide range of small texts published in the last couple of years, written in very different places under very diverse circumstances. And these texts also testify your transition from Beatrice to Paul. Would you agree that these texts, although they have lots of different topics, have one thing in common, that they treat the experiences, the problems and chances of traveling, of migrating, of border crossings?
Yes, absolutely. But even though those experiences are, of course, as you said, very different, they are like they have, of course, like different political values and status as well. So I'm not intending to say that, for instance, gender transitioning is the same as border crossing or as being a migrant. But it's true that in my experience, when I was transitioning at the beginning, and my passport didn't correspond anymore to my physical body, to put it that way, like basically to the political fiction that I am now, like physically. At that moment, the passport that I had became somehow obsolete, mm-hmm. and I couldn't really cross the borders anymore as I used to do it before. Since I had a privilege, in a sense, of being like my skin is white, so I look like even though I'm from the south, from Spain, but of course I have this privilege of having like a European passport and being used to just like cross borders without any problem. And suddenly, of course, this passport became problematic because of my gender transitioning. And therefore, I found myself, together with my fellow friends, migrants, as not being able to cross these borders, right? That for us, for some of us, those that are privileged, look almost like inexisting limits, right? But for some of the bodies that do not have the same political status that the white body or the gender normalized body, of course, those borders become life-threatening. And this is one of the experiences that I really wanted to speak about in these different texts. As you said, I actually wrote through many different years. In reality, I started writing in 2013 when the extreme right actually took the streets. I was living at that time in Paris, and the extreme right became very prominent and used some of the techniques that the left and the feminist and the gay and lesbian and trans movement had been using before to actually take the street and start like reclaiming, demanding, almost like a kind of a counter-revolutionary language of reinstalling a very patriarchal and colonial language. And at that moment, I realized I really had the feeling that I had to say something publicly, that I couldn't remain like basically like an academic or just working at the museum, but that I really wanted to say something publicly. And that's how I started to write it, mostly in journals, which basically was like quite unusual for me, like to write in newspapers. And that's how these chronicles started, actually.
Yeah, and the book's title is An Apartment on Uranus, Chronicles of the Crossing. And Uranus is a very far away planet and a Greek figure as well. In Greek mythology, Uranus is the son of Earth Gaia, and he's born without any act of procreation. At the same time, he's the father of all the important titans of the world, of Kronos, of Okeanos, etc. So this not very heterosexual story is why the German lawyer Karl Heinrich Ulrich in the 19th century came up with the term Uranismus. And by Uranismus, he described something like a third sex, people that didn't really fit into the conventional sex and gender norms. And in your text, you say that you would like to rent an apartment on Uranus. So the question is, have you found one in the meantime? And why do you like being there, seeing the world from there, from Uranus?
Well, yeah, actually, the title comes from a dream that I had. And one of the things that I have been trying to do in the last years is trying to reappropriate dreams, take them away from the capture that is imposed by both psychiatric and psychoanalytical discourses and by, like, popular commercial culture. In a sense, it seems that the realm of the mind and of dreams is extremely poor in Western cultures, and we always have like this Oedipus explanation for every dream. So in this sense, when I had this dream that basically I had an apartment on Uranus, and actually in my dream I had an apartment in every planet, but the one on Uranus was the one that I really wanted to keep and that I was like obsessed about. Of course, then when I woke up, I kept thinking like, why this obsession of mine with this apartment on Uranus? And then I realized that, of course, that Uranus was like Uranism, and in the sense that opens for me like a different political genealogy than the one that will be given to me by, like, let's say, psychoanalysis, if this dream will have to be explained to me just by the relationships with my father and my mother. In a sense, maybe I'm also the son of Ulrich. And in that sense, like a kind of a non-biological and more like a political and some kind of minority, somatopolitical genealogy that connects me to someone like Ulrich that I have never known in my life, but nevertheless was fighting a fight that seems to continue today, and in which I feel myself much more inscribed than, for instance, let's say, the biological genealogy of my parents. And maybe, well, I mean, I'm not saying that I'm not grateful to my parents, which I am, but I feel like, in a sense, like more the son of Ulrich or the son of Pedro Lemebel or the son of people like Anne Sprinkle.
Yeah. Do you think that seeing the world through the eyes of somebody who resists the most fundamental scheme of social categorization, which is male, female, man, woman, is an epistemic, maybe a hermeneutical advantage? Maybe you can describe a bit what you now can see, what you didn't see before when you weren't yet transitioning.
Well, my feeling is actually that we are going through an epistemological transition right now. I mean, my feeling is that it's not just the issue, it's not just that I am transitioning myself and then I'm going to be reflecting on my own transition and so on. Is that when I was traveling to all these different countries and meeting different activist groups and artists and different critical thinkers and so on, I realized that the question was not my transition, but the question was much more fundamental. One is that we are going as a planet through a political total transition. A transition that for me can only be compared to the one that happened in the 16th century when capitalism was launched, when the colonial enterprise actually started, when the printing press was invented. So something quite similar in the sense of such a big rupture is happening today, and this is a major transition. Of course, that has to do also with ecological changes, with the climate crisis. Of course, has been incremented by the virus crisis. But for me, this is quite important. Basically, coming to acknowledge that we are going through this transition, and this transition, among other things, has to do with questioning the taxonomical categories that were invented precisely within this colonial capitalist enterprise of the 16th, 19th centuries, right? Which were, as I would say, fundamentally based on the idea of the family as a core of sexual reproduction and the transformation of the body into a machine for working or consuming. These two elements were working around the categories both of sex difference, or we could say gender difference, basically masculinity, femininity, but also the difference between homosexuality and heterosexuality as pathology and normality. And of course, the notion of race that was invented as a scientific category and was the base that actually allowed the 18th and 19th century culture to legitimize the colonial enterprise. All those categories and taxonomies that I'm actually calling in these some of these chronicles, the patriarchal colonial epistemology, are cracking down are collapsing now. This is what is happening in front of us. Even though that's for me the most important political event that we're living through, and I think it's such an important moment historically that we're living that cannot be compared to any other moment that has been lived in history, at least for the three last centuries. This is enormous. That's why everything that we knew before is changing. And in face or against this change, of course, new authoritarian, new fascist, new neo-nationalist forces are really like gathering again and arising as a kind of a counter-revolutionary force. But of course, this, in my view, and of course I can look like too utopian, but in my view, this epistemological shift could not be stopped. I mean, it can be, it can go slower, of course. We can have like as many Trumps and Bolsonaros as we want in the meantime. And of course, the conditions in which this epistemological and political change is taking place is the condition of a war against the living bodies. That's the condition in which we're living. So I'm at the same time that I'm saying that we're living through a revolutionary moment, I'm also saying that this moment is a moment of war, and that is a very violent moment in which many of us, some of us, those that are more precarious, that are more vulnerable, are dying. And therefore, I'm not saying that, you know, this is like, oh, this is a revolution, fantastic. No, I mean, this is for me, it's an extraordinary complex moment. But we have to understand that we're living through a revolution and an epistemic shift. Yes.
It's very, very interesting what you're talking about, and it's very complex. And I thought that in your text, capitalism plays a key role. You argue that we cannot understand our sex and gender categories, our social categories, independently from our global economic system. And sometimes it sounds
Absolutely.
A bit as if you'd say that capitalism dictates, in a way, our social categories. So that the only way to overcome this hierarchical gender structure, social structure, is by prevailing over capitalism. Is this what you want to say?
Well, what I'm trying to say is that capitalism is not just an economic system. Capitalism is governmental technology that is also producing subjectivity, that produces a type of subject. And this is a type of subject that is reduced to the functions of production of wealth and reproduction, sexual reproduction, right?
Mm-hmm.
And is in order for this body to be reduced to sexual reproduction and to production, meaning to become a living machine, all these categories that I was talking to you about, gender difference, the difference between heterosexuality and homosexuality, racial difference, to define, in order to define a subject that is privileged in relation to production, reproduction and consumption, and a subject that is dispossessed, of which all energy and production is being captured, the notion of race has been produced. So I think that we need to look at those political categories, those forms of oppression, in a kind of a global way. Because until now, what we have been doing through the movements of identity politics is that we have segmented those fights, meaning like women have been fighting for the recognition of women within, let's say, patriarchal society. Then we had the civil rights movements in which non-white people were fighting for the recognition on non-white bodies within a democracy that was mostly colonial. Then we had the homosexual movement fighting for rights in a society that was mostly heterosexual. And therefore, the fights that we were fighting for were the right to get married and the right to adoption. So what I'm saying is that until now, all the fights of the last century have been inscribed within the model of identity politics, have been segmented, and in reality have not radically questioned the both colonial and patriarchal foundations of capitalism. And I think that this is exactly what is happening now, and that's why the revolution that we're going through will be so extraordinary. And of course, I'm not saying that this revolution will actually be a winning moment. Absolutely not. I mean, this is an extremely complex moment, and we can also see a total defeat, and we can also go through moments of regression and blockage, of course. But I'm saying that the questioning will not be done through the identity politics movements that we've seen before. What we need is a new, what I call a new somatopolitical alliance, meaning an alliance of bodies that have been dispossessed, of bodies that have been constructed as abnormal, as subjected within this patriarchal and colonial regime in which we live in.
Paul, you're currently in Paris, where you are supporting the demonstrations against racism and
Yes.
police violence that are taking place after George Floyd has been murdered by a policeman in the United States. In France as well, only in the past year, three people died a horrible death after being fixated by the police. So, how do you
Yes.
experience the protests in Paris this week?
Well, honestly, I have to say that this last week, with both in what I've been following through what is happening in the United States and then all the movement that has been organized here in France, I think this is an extraordinary uprising. I think this is the biggest and most important uprising against racism and colonial. Let's say we could say the colonial regime of not only of politically but also the colonization of the imaginary and the political subject. I think this is the major uprising after the 60s, which goes in the direction of what I was saying before, is that really we are going and living through a revolutionary moment. I mean, I have not been in the demonstrations in the US, but I've been here in France in the demonstration that was organized a couple of days ago. Basically, it's done by very young people. What was really surprising to me is that most of the people that gather in this huge manifestation demonstration that took place in Paris a couple of days ago, actually most of them are under 30, which basically they are as young as the kids that are gathering in the Friday for Future movement, right? So what I, honestly for me was such a beautiful moment, because suddenly I thought, well, a new generation is taking over, and this generation is absolutely different than the one that we've seen before. And one of the most beautiful things as well was seeing in this march many of the people that I had seen already in the feminist march of this 7th and 8th of March before the virus, which was also a very intense moment of a feminist and transfeminist queer uprising. And some of these people, I would say many of those people that were in the march, in the feminist march, actually gathered the demonstration a couple of days ago. So what I'm seeing really is the coming together of this new queer feminist anti-racist alliance, which for me is the only one able to become an antagonistic force to what is happening right now. I don't think that we can hope, we can have hope in any kind of, let's say, of antagonism that is coming from all discourses, even including communism as an both political and imaginary force, because communism was still very much white. The model of the subject was at the center of communism was still very white, very heterosexual, very masculine. And what we're seeing now is a sexualized and a racialized crowd that is gathering together in a new alliance to actually criticize and move away from this patriarchal colonial regime that has brought us to where we are now.
So, a great sign of hope. I find it very interesting that you emphasize more the similarities than the differences among the identities of Black people, migrants, refugees, and transgender and feminist people. So, what do you think? What do they have in common? And do you really think that there's a new form of consciousness of these structural parallels among these groups, at least right now?
Yes. I'm not saying that they do have something in common themselves. I think that that's the important point for me, is that in order for us to become a political subject able to become antagonistic to the patriarchal, colonial, and capitalist regime in which we live in, we do not need to share a natural bond. We do not need to be all the same. We do not need to share identity. But I think that this is crucial because until now, for instance, in order for us to be feminist, we all needed to be women. And of course, like this has been also promoting, a kind of a purification of the identity of women. Basically, like non-white women has been excluded, the sex workers were excluded as well, the trans women were excluded. And so at least I've been fighting myself for an expanded feminism that is not even a humanism, right? That is an expanded feminism. And within this expanded feminism, which is a radical critique of the patriarchal regime, what I see now is the possibility of creating more and more critical alliances, which actually gather together because they understood for the first time that the oppression, the racial oppression, sexual and gender oppression that we're living through could only be overcome if we move together from this patriarchal colonial regime, right? Which until now was like basically, let's fight for black identity, let's fight for the rights of women, let's fight for the rights of homosexual. Now I think that is something different that is happening, which is that maybe a kind of a critical program for the transformation of society is being created, is being imagined for the first time, maybe also with a radical ecological transformation, with a critique of the centrality that until now, the human European subject had within this historical project.
Yeah, and you set your hope on this new alliances you described. And in your book, you talk about micro revolutions. And I find this term very fascinating because at first glance, it seems paradoxical to me. How can a revolution be microscopic without losing its very meaning? So maybe you can explain a bit, what do you mean by micro revolution? And especially, are we currently witnessing one? Are these protests against racism and so on, are they a micro revolution? And in which sense?
Well, actually, I would say that at this point, the revolution that is taking place after the brutal killing of George Floyd, I think, is becoming a macro revolution because it's taking the level, honestly, it's taking a kind of a global scale, right? But until now, and I think that the uprising that we're seeing now can only be explained through understanding a multiplicity of micro revolutions that were taking place already before, right? It's like these movements that we've seen, like for instance, the centrality of the Black Lives Matter movement, it is not just like popping up like from nowhere, right? Has like a long genealogy and is being inscribed in along many other fights and struggles, right? And what I'm speaking about micro revolutions because also I think what I'm thinking is a kind of a micro political transformation. Not only when we speak about like revolution or we speak about transformation, social transformation, we always kind of thinking about the transformation of the structures of production and therefore economy, right? That is the center of the discourse, both of the right and of the left, even in communist regimes, right? Yeah. Or in communist ideals of transformation. Well, I'm really much more interested in the transformation of the techniques of reproduction and the critical reappropriation of the technologies of production of subjectivity. And that can only happen at the level of micropolitics. It is not just like changing, let's say, power. Or changing, like for instance, the traditional idea that we have of parties becoming elected or being elected in let's say democratic elections, right? I think that the revolution that we are seeing now, in a sense, like along the lines of the revolution that was happening in the 60s, that had to do with gender, sexuality, the anti-psychiatric movement, and so on. Those were also micro-political revolutions. They were actually operating at a different level, which is the level of production of subjectivity. And I think that those ones are the most crucial because those are happening at the level of consciousness.
Yeah, maybe you could just give us an example if you say we are
Well,
currently.
actually, I think that we have been seeing like very interesting examples through the Corona crisis and the way in which the Corona crisis has been politically managed, right? For instance, of course, we are moving from what was before a written culture into a new culture that I would call cyber oral, right? Which is the best example is exactly what we're doing now, for instance, right? We're connected. Nevertheless, the connection is completely digital. Nevertheless, we're fully speaking and organizing knowledge, right, together. And in a sense, we're creating a new place that doesn't exist physically, but that exists as a place of consciousness
A
and even more
virtual room.
political. Yes, absolutely. So this movement from, for instance, from the body being controlled by architectural institutions, meaning the school, the factory, the prison, the psychiatric institution, the body being now controlled. And of course, when I say control, I can also speak about like a critical agency that could critically reappropriate these technologies, right? Well, this formation and control of subjectivity is not happening anymore in relation to these macro political institutions, meaning, for instance, maybe now for your body to be produced as a subject, you don't even need to go to the school. You don't even need to go to the hospital. You don't even need to go to the factory. But this process of transformation and control of subjectivity will be produced in your own home with technologies that are quite close to your own body, right? Another example that I can give you that I had a study in depth. I did it in a book that is called Testo Junkie that I think is also translated in German.
Yeah, and it's very popular here in Germany.
Okay, well, is the way in which the gender identity and subjectivity is being produced through chemical technologies, right? I think the best example of this was the production and commercialization of the contraceptive pill during the 1960s, which is now the most sold chemical substance in the world and in history, right? So there you see how heterosexual female subjectivity in particular has been produced in a very, I would say, not even just micro-political, but it's really like a chemopolitical way through the connection with something which is not just like an architecture of power as it was seen before, let's say the school or the hospital, but something that is extremely small and that goes into your body and that you can actually swallow and would transform the way you relate to others and your possibility, for instance, of being or not being a reproductive body, right? So
Yeah.
when I'm talking about micropolitics and about micropolitical techniques, I'm also talking about these digital and chemical miniaturization of the technologies of power that we have known through modernity in disciplinary regimes.
Absolutely. And you've been talking about an epistemological shift, and you have been talking about new alliances, you have been talking about reappropriating forms of subjectivity. But do you have an idea what would be the common goal of these new alliances that now go to the streets?
Well, I think that there's quite a difference between the let's say integration of a minority subject within the normalized heterosexual racial society, right? And let's say the ways in which until now either women, sexual minorities, let's say homosexuals, and also let's say gender minorities, the transgender and transsexual community, the intersex groups, and so on, have been demanding recognition and being included within the heterosexual society, or the ways in which racial minorities have been demanding to be recognized or justice to be made within a system that was still colonial. I think that was the horizon of identity politics fights during the last 50 years. I think that now we might be in a different scenario. I'm not saying that this is will emerge like immediately. This is also going to take place with the time. Those are like complex alliances that have to be constructed, and therefore this is not going to happen from today to tomorrow, right? So you have to understand that when I'm speaking about epistemological shifts, I'm also speaking about historical transitions that will take sometimes time. For instance, the wine that was speaking before about of the 16th century took like probably more than a century. Now the conditions of acceleration of capitalism are such, and the conditions of technological production are such that maybe, and also I would say of ecological destruction and destruction of bodies and violence and dispossession are such that maybe either this transition and this epistemic and political shift is quick enough for the planet to be safe, or maybe we will find ourselves in a very I'm not going to say apocalyptic, but in a very complex moment. I'm not going to say apocalyptic because, as Donna Haraway says, well, the worst that could happen, I mean, it's not really that the humanity might perish finally, because this is anyway what will happen at some point, right? So if we look at it from a kind of a cosmic time. But of course, I think that those alliances have to be constructed. And what we could see, which is not the case until now, I want to stress this, is that until now, for instance, class fights were mostly, sometimes were really anti-feminist or anti-black and migrant people, right? In the sense that we have opposed class and gender, we have opposed class and race. Now, for the first time, we get to understand that either we find coalitions between those fights, or we will not be able to overcome the what I would call the necropolitical basis of capitalism, meaning the ways in which capitalism works according to technologies of violence and destruction of the body and nature, right? So this is, of course, something that has to be done, that has to be constructed. What I mean is that the political subject that I'm speaking about does not exist. This political subject is not just a black body, is not just a homosexual body, is not just, let's say, the body of the earth as an ecological system. It is not just the crib body. It's something other. It's the possibility of all bodies to move away from these categories and maybe imagine collectively together a different horizon for political production and reproduction of life on the planet, right? So this is something that has to be constructed. And what I've been fighting myself for is now that I think that many of the forms of knowledge that we have been constructing during the last three centuries, I wouldn't say that they're obsolete, but I think they're highly problematic, because those are knowledges that have contributed really to the oppression of women, to the oppression of gender minorities, to the oppression of racialized bodies. So maybe what we need to do is kind of a start a large movement of unlearning everything that we learned through the capitalist and colonial regime, and starting to think, to organize together experimental new ways of living. And again, that's why I'm speaking about micro revolutions, because basically I don't think that this can happen that just like a kind of a, of course, even though now the movement that we have looks like it's something global in the last days, like because of the demonstrations. But what I'm seeing is that we will need to have like hundreds and thousands of local micro experimental movements, testing different ways of reacting against and fighting against the patriarchal colonial regime.
So you are describing a huge challenge, and unfortunately we have to come to the end, Paul. So last question and very quick response, please. How would you then describe this new horizon you were talking about? What would be the place, the world in which you would like to come to rest in the end?
Well, I think that all living beings in the planet, and I'm not just thinking about humans in this respect, how all living beings in the planet could actually share this planet differently. And therefore, we maybe find other ways of producing and consuming energy which are not just based on the extraction and capture of some of these bodies of the energy of others, right? This looks like very abstract what I'm saying, but I think that we need to move away as much as possible from the traditional ways of understanding production and reproduction that we had until now. And therefore, that's why in my book, I'm also calling to really unconscious forces. I think that we need to put poetry, imagination, art, literature at the center of this project, because if we need to imagine a new world, only art can do it. And I'm not saying only artists, because I think that all of us can use the imagination to actually move forward and construct together this new world in which we wish that we could live.
Thank you so much for this exciting and notable conversation. All the best to you, Paul Preciado.
Thank you so much, Simon. Thank you.